Grant and Danny, brought to you today and each day by the law firm Condori and Murrah. They will handle estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate, admin, anything else you need. Their attorneys are awaiting your call right now. Schedule a consultation with their team today at kmlawyers.com. And if you mention us, they'll give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. We're taking you up to 6:30 on the fan. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, former general manager in Major League Baseball and good friend of mine, Jim Duquette, who is the GM of the O's and the Mets, now works over at MLB Network Radio. Just did some radio with him very recently. Duke, I did not think we'd be talking today about the Nats firing Mike Rizzo, but here we are. How are you, sir?
I did not expect this either, Grant. I am doing fine. Danny, good to be with you. But we didn't even come close to this topic when you and I were together last about a week ago because we didn't think this would happen. So, yeah, a little surprising.
Yeah, we touched on Davey Martinez. That felt imminent, but this one is very different. Right. So there's a lot of different ways to go here, but let me just get your assessment. As a guy who's been in that chair, who's been frankly, Rizzo was a high-ranking front office guy even when you were a GM, so you've been on the phone and worked with him. Like, what is your take on what he was as an executive at his peak and maybe right now at this point as a GM, what caliber of leader and front office exec he is?
Well, I think, you know, there's no denying his evaluation skills and the results that he's had. And when you look at, you know, the period leading up to the World Series and in the World Series itself, I mean, those his track record was one of the best in the sport. For that period of time, 5-6 years leading, you know, and including 2019, I mean, and to get a World Series title, those don't happen, as you know, they don't happen very often. So, you know, he was one of the best, I would say the best general managers and had one of the most successful track records. Obviously since then, it hasn't been nearly as good. And a lot of times, you know, when you do have that type of success and then you go through a rebuild and you're running a lower payroll, you know, comparatively to those years, you know, the industry feels it's more more ownership related to the, you know, the maybe the lack of spending than it is, you know, being, let's say, you know, general manager that's made more mistakes or maybe not keeping up with the analytics, which is something that I think, you know, throughout the industry is clear. You know, there's an analytics side, obviously, and then there's the old school side when it comes to evaluations. And Mike, you know, obviously was geared way more towards that side. Nationals were more probably the closest to old school in the sport, maybe them in Colorado. And consequently, you know, you've seen those two teams really struggle on the field at the major league level over the past 5 years.
So same question here, Jim, but for the learners, kind of your impression of them. I think there's a pre-2019 conversation and kind of a post Ted Lerner's passing conversation.
Yeah. I think, from that side of it, again, it had, they looked like they were engaged, involved with the major league team. You saw that there was a big presence, and they seem to relish and bask in the success of the team. And then as the team has kind of gone south, you haven't seen as much of them. Now you do see them and did see them in spring training, but it didn't seem like they had as much of a presence here recently. And they seemed to, I don't know if passive was the right word, you know, 'cause behind the scenes, we don't know exactly what's going on, but certainly there was the feeling that it was more difficult to navigate with the group post death of you know, Mr. Lerner, with, let's say, a number of different factions are the right word, but certainly, you know, when you're dealing with a group versus one or two people, it's way more difficult to run a franchise. I can tell you that happened to me quite a bit when it came to, you know, my dealings with the Orioles and the Mets, for that matter. Just, you know, the more people you had to deal with, the much more difficult aspect there was of getting decisions made.
Jim Duquette is with us here on Grant and Danny, former big league GM, now talk shop over at MLB Network Radio. So then let's dive in on some of the issues they've had in the draft and player development. This has been written about quite a bit. Ken Rosenthal nationally, Barry Sfaluga locally. And this is years of this where people have taken them to task, and it finally seems to have caught up to them. You know, why do you think they've struggled so much drafting and developing talent?
Well, so I don't separate the two. They are together. They have to be together to be successful. So it, because what ends up happening is one department, you know, drafts and says, hey, that guy was a big leaguer when we drafted him, and player development says he was a lousy player when we got him, you know, when things aren't going well. They have to work in tandem. So there's been a breakdown on both sides of things. Let's just take the evaluation side. If they thought Elijah Green was a good draft, and you go back to that year, 22, or if you go back to, you could go back to 19 or 18, some of those drafts that were really, really short on talent. I don't care what kind of player development system you have. If they can't play, you can't make, you know, we had a saying, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken, garbage, I'll call it. You know, and so, like, it starts with the evaluation and being correct on that. Elijah Green was not a good draft. He was a high strikeout guy. That was one of those guys, you know, from player development, that was going to be a really difficult task for them to develop him into a big, to a major league hitter. He certainly has major league power, but major league hitter and cutting down on strikeouts, that just doesn't happen very often. And then when it does, it takes a while. So I think that there's a lot of blame to be put on the scouting side, and they've made some changes to that. And the player development side, which I'm not as familiar if they made
The guy running it now. Eddie Longos is in, I think, year two doing it, just like their draft guys.
So I, you know, at least they've identified it. I would say this, they definitely got to it a little slower on the scouting side. It sounds like the same thing on the player development side. They should have been able to make changes sooner. And in fairness, when you draft guys, you need at least 2 or 3 years before you can really get a sense of what kind of player they're going to be. So, if you look at the, 18, right, the best guy they got out of that draft was, I think, Jake Irvin in the fourth round. Like, you probably didn't know that until 21, and he had COVID, which was a disaster. So, you know, anyway, the point on that is, you know, they did make some changes on that. And, you know, consequently, it wouldn't be fair to evaluate this new group. Danny Haas has got a great reputation in the scouting circles. But, you know, we're not going to know really for a couple years how his drafts really turn out.
Jim Duquette with us here on Grant and Danny. So by way of analogy, so when I was in sixth grade, I made a deal with my parents. For every A, I got like $10. For every B, I got $5. For every C, I got nothing. For every D, or worse, I got in trouble. And so when I came home and had some D's on the report card, I got in trouble. There was a clear standard and a metric that I was being judged by, right?
I wonder
what that is when applied here. And that's my fundamental question is, from ownership, was it a certain number of games under 500? Was it a certain number of draft picks that you missed? I just wonder, from an unengaged ownership group to come off the mountaintop for the first time in a long time and say, this is unacceptable. It's like, oh, man, okay, well, maybe, but what were we judging against? And that's kind of my fundamental question here.
No, that's fair. I think that, you know, maybe they had that conversation. You know, ownership hasn't made themselves available. I don't know if they will or not. But, you know, that is a fair question, that when you're in the front office, that's all you wanted to be evaluated on. Give me what your standard is. What's your evaluation? Is it wins and losses at the end of the day? I always felt that was, you know, we've seen in any sport, you know, the you are what your record says you are, right? So if you've been bottom two or three over the last few years, that's what you've been. I don't care. You can paint these great pictures of your farm system, which they don't have. But even if they did, your one loss record on the field is what matters. So I would guess that they'll fall back on something like that. You know, the one thing I was wondering too was, you know, listen, I could have seen maybe Davey Martinez, being let go. What I didn't know was, you know, were they trying to get Mike Rizzo to make a change there? And he said, listen, I don't think that's the answer. I think it's, payroll driven. You didn't give me enough money, whatever it might be. And they said, well, we want you to make a change. If you're not going to make a change, you're both gone. Like, I don't know that, you know, but that has happened in the past with other organizations as well. So, we'll hear, I'm sure, some more of those details at some point.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I was told that that's not how it went, that basically they went to both of them and said, you're done. But
right.
We don't know if that's true or not. That's just, you know, what I was told as to how it went down. Jim Duquette, sure. Former GM in the big leagues with us, giving us great insight here on Grant and Danny. So I want to bounce some names off of you and just pick your brain on some of the guys that could okay. be interviewed for this thing moving forward. First, do you know much about Mike DiBartolo, who they're going to turn to here, who's been in this front office for a while as Mike Rizzo's assistant?
I just know he's more of an analytics-driven guy, right? And that's about all I know, other than, you know, being obviously, you know, in the organization for a while. And that, you know, that happened to me when I was with the Mets. You know, when a transition happens, you know the organization well, you know the infrastructure really well, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can look at that from afar in two ways, right? You can say, well, he was a part of the problem. Or, you know, this is how I was when I was with the Mets. I knew where we were weak, where we had to make some changes right away. And so my plan when I interviewed with ownership on that was, you know, here's where we're deficient in these areas. And that was helpful to get us through a certain period of time. So, you know, there's good and bad with hiring from within.
No doubt. He'll have a chance to show himself well, and it's a great opportunity because he and some of the other guys in that front office, just they haven't gotten a lot of fanfare and have done a lot of hard work behind the scenes for a long time. We had Jeff Passan on earlier today, and he said if he was the Lerners, he would do everything he could to go get Eric Neander with the Rays in some turmoil, ownership, ballpark-wise, whatever else is going on. Neander, of course, for people that don't know, is one of the most beloved front office execs in all of baseball, and you know, turns a very little amount of money into a lot of wins every year with the Rays as a small market executive. I ask you, is that reality? I mean, to me, I can't do a cartwheel. You know that, Duke, but I would do my best to try if yes, they could get yes. Neander. I mean, would he leave there? Is that a thing, do you think, that they could even be a legitimate player to land him?
Well, so the only way that I could see he would even consider that is if he was able to get permission from his owner. And the hard part on that is that team is for sale. And if you're the prospective owner that's in that, you know, that you know, and there's some local ownership, a guy out of Jacksonville that is you know, looking to buy. Actually, they have a letter of intent to buy it. They are way more valuable with him running it than not. And, you know, he'd have to get permission from that new group. And it's not likely that new group would let him leave. So even if he wanted to, it'd be hard to do.
He's already listed as a president. It's not like he would just go GM to president. If you're already a president, is it like football where you need a bigger title or no?
Well, there isn't really you could try to bring him in as the president of the organization. I think what Eric would have to do would be to go to the new ownership group and say, listen, you're coming in here, new ownership. You want your own leadership. This is a time for you to start fresh. You know, allow me to go interview with a couple of organizations I have interest in. You know, he would have to push it from his end. And I think if that was the case, then you wouldn't have to worry about that upward mobility, rule that Major League Baseball has.
So, Jim, just along this process, along the road, while they're losing 11 straight, getting swept by Colorado and knocked around, and you know, yep. the season's kind of going off the rails, one of the stunning things to me, which led a lot of people from outside looking in, to sort of go, there must have been some kind of ultimatum. And I know Grant has heard to the contrary, but I can't believe nothing was switched. Like, you don't switch out the right. third base coach, the guy that throws mm-hmm. BP, the guy that rolls the tarp out, the guy that is right. putting the home plate box in, the concessions. Like, no changes at all, top to bottom, are made, which says to me in some way, and I just want your comment on this, that this is almost like these two guys giving the one finger salute to ownership, going, right. if somebody moves on, or we move on from somebody, it makes it look like it's their fault. This is your fault. Fire me if you want to. That's kind of what it looks like from the outside.
Right. So you know, if you go and look at what happened with the Texas Rangers, who had expectations of winning, right? They went and they got rid of their hitting coach. Mm-hmm. And other teams have done some similar type of moves. And that was kind of my point on this with Rizzo and Davey. And, you know, Grant said what he said. And, you know, hey, I'm not going to doubt that. I just have seen this enough where it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, the whole Davey Martinez protecting his coaches, you know, conversation that took place, and that was botched at the time. But you know, there had to been conversation going on internally about, hey, do you make changes with one or two or a couple of your coaches and swap out a couple other guys? that to me would have been a step in, you know, at least one step, and they didn't do it. And all I can imagine is not only was Davey fighting for it, but I'm sure Mike was too.
Two other names. Thad Levine. What kind of GM candidate and or GM is he? He's actually got ties to the area. He's from Alexandria, I think.
Right. He has ties to the area. He would be very good. He's had excellent training in his career. He's come from Colorado, and he was in Texas with some successful teams there. And he obviously was with Minnesota most recently. He's never been the guy that, you know, he's been GM, but he was under president of baseball operations. He was an assistant GM in Texas under John Daniels, who was successful. He's never been like that president of baseball operations. He's had a couple of opportunities to interview for other jobs where he's declined it because he liked the situation. He's a very loyal guy. He's a very capable guy. He's had good training. He would be an excellent, candidate if you're looking at, you know, top four or five guys, and you could talk to him now, which is also an advantage because he's out of a job at the moment. You can get, you know, an assessment. I would expect he would get an interview before anyone else gets asked for permission, because it's a free look, it's a free listen, right?
You why not?
You go call them up. Hey, we'd love you to come in and analyze our organization. Tell us what you think. Give us your pros and cons. Like, that's a no-brainer, and he should get an interview, and I think he'd be a good candidate.
Give me some other names that you like, either, and maybe these are like guys that are just sous chefs right now that you think eventually would make good GMs, or second, you know, iteration guys who have already been a GM.
Well, I think from, you know, a couple of, the hard part on this aspect is every organization these days. Let's take Brandon Gomes, who I think would be very good, who is the GM in L.A. under Andrew Friedman, right? If you named him the president of baseball operations, which would be, you know, the right thing, or Carter Hawkins, who's GM with the Cubs, who's under Jed Hoyer. You know, those guys, you know, are I think, ready to be, presidents of baseball operations. There are a ton of organizations that have just different layers of executives, and getting permission is really, really difficult. But I think you could, for that title of, you know, the POBO title, right, president of baseball operations, I think you could get, you know, one of those two guys would absolutely, or I think both would have interest, and I think they would be excellent candidates. So I think those, I would start there. I'd also, and I don't think you can get him, but, you know, Theo Epstein's name comes up every once in a while. He's part of an ownership group now with the Red Sox. You would have to, I think, give a small percentage ownership stake in the team, which I can't see them doing. But he's a guy that I would certainly keep an eye on and see if he would have interest as well.
Jim, awesome with us as always, man. Really appreciate you joining.
Anytime, guys. Talk to you later.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, really good info there from Jim Duquette, MLB Network Radio, who's a former big league general manager. Do you worry about their ability to do better here? And I don't mean that they can't. I mean, how much trust do you have that this search is going to go well?
Yeah.
Let me ask it even more accurately to what I'm worried about. How sure are we that they're going to spend big on these positions? That they're going to go out there and really try to... I mean, he just threw out some huge names. A lot of those would be amazing. I mean, it could be the greatest day in Nats history if a Theo Epstein walks through that door. It would be an unbelievable win if Eric Neander is your next GM, who's one of the most beloved front office execs in the sport. Carter Hawkins is my guy. I mean, I was having him on minors and majors when he was running the Guardians, the Indians system, you know, 7-8 years ago. He's now the GM of the Cubs. And he's done a bang-up job. If they named him team president, I would be elated. That's awesome. This costs money.
Yeah.
You know, this costs plucking guys away from good situations and saying, ours is better. How do you make that case right now?
Totally. I mean, the guy that I'm in love with is Josh Burns, for example, is director of scouting for the Dodgers. Every step that he's been in his career, by the way, Thad Levine's teammate at Haverford, you sleep on that. Every step he's been in his career, that group that he built won divisions, went to the World Series, won them. So the Indians, when they were great, the Rockies, that group went to the World Series. It was with the Red Sox when they won the World Series, built the Diamondbacks on a fractional payroll, turned them into division winners, was with the Padres, bottom five payroll, had them competing for divisions, been with the Dodgers running their scouting department for the last decade plus. Like, that dude has a pretty cushy gig in L.A., just hanging out, you know, finding players from all over the world, winning 100 games a year. If you want Josh Burns, and any of the other guys that Duquette made, yeah, named or you named, like, that is going to require a sale job, yeoman's effort, and money. I have zero trust that that happens. Zero.
800-636-1067. You want to join us on G&D. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Welcome back, and thank you for making the show part of your day. One of the issues I have right now, one of the problems today, 24 hours after firing Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez, that I've got is there's no press conference happening with ownership, and there's not going to be.
Right.
Mark Lerner's not going to take questions. Nobody's going to sit there and say, this is why we fired Mike Rizzo. This is what our plan is for the next executive. We want to get more data-driven. We want to do these three things that we weren't doing before. There is a lack of transparency. There has been for a while at the ownership level. But at least Rizzo has been there to take the bullets and answer the questions. He goes on the radio here on the station every single Wednesday and answers questions. He's around the ballpark. And if you, you know, find him, talk to him, whatever, you can run things by him. That's gone now. And for the remainder of the season, respectfully to Mike DiBartolo, who is a interim general manager, that's not really what you're looking for. And I don't even know if they're going to have some major press conference with him. They're certainly not before the draft because he's too busy. I mean, he's got 6 days to prepare for something that, yeah, as of yesterday, he wasn't preparing for in the same capacity. The trade deadline's right after that. So do I think he's going to be eventually talking to the media after the draft? Yeah, when they're asking him about Ethan Holiday going 1-1 or Cade Anderson being the pick out of LSU. But when you fire a team president, especially one that's won a championship and been around as long as Mike Rizzo was, I think you got to answer some questions about it. And when you fire a team president, general manager, and a head coach, in this case, manager in baseball, together, I think you got to step up to the mic. And it's not very often that you need to. I don't even know who it would be. I guess it would have to be Mark Lerner. And I'm not completely sure of, you know, what kind of,
yeah, not to be insensitive about it,
health he's in exactly.
Can he do that? I don't know.
I don't either. I'm not trying to be insensitive at all. I hope it's not coming off that way. I don't know what kind of health he's in. But that's also a problem. I mean, if they can't do it, not because they don't want to, which I think is probably what it is, but also because there's no one to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that also is, I mean, to me, that's a siren sounding from miles away that tells you everything you need to know. If there's no one that can hold that press conference to say why they did this and what they think, that's a big, big problem.
Yeah, it tells you the story.
If it's Alan Gottlieb who runs the show, or if it's, it doesn't matter who it is. I can fire off names nobody's heard of. But someone should be sitting at a podium somewhere at Nats Park in the next 24 to 48 hours explaining the decision. And that the fact that that's not happening is a problem to me.
And we all know it's not happening too. Yeah, that's
the, you know, right. I didn't do it as a joke, but I asked somebody with the team just because I like to be able to say, hey, we reached out. Like I don't want to say when someone says, why don't you get Mark Lerner on? And I go, well, Mark Lerner's not going to come on the show. I need to have asked to make sure.
Right.
Let's make sure we request that so we could say that we did. And I just did my due diligence and said, hey, is there going to be some press conference where we can ask some questions? And the answer pretty quickly was, that's not expected. I knew that before I asked the text. You sent the text.
Yeah, it's, and again, it tells you a huge part of the story. And I understand what happened to that family dynamic where the patriarch passed away, and it's, you know, everybody's got different shares of control, and there's different silos, and you know, this committee of sons, daughters, son-in-laws, daughters-in-laws, Mark Lerner himself, has led to organizational kind of chaos, to put it mildly, you know, and it's not all malicious. It's not all bad. It's not all, you know, ill intent where people are backstabbing like episodes of Succession, but it's close to a real life version of that in that sense. And that's kind of, to your point, is kind of the evidence here that you would need. This is a major decision, whether it was right or wrong. And I think a great points can be made in either direction, talking about moving on from Rizzo and Davey in one fell swoop. That is not a crazy thing to do when the team hasn't been good in 6 years. Right? That's not nuts that might happen. But the simple fact is, if this was a normal course of events where team underachieves, key decision makers lose job, you would see the owner or the president or whomever out front to answer those questions. Here's what, here's why, here's the criteria, here's what we needed. We thank them for their service. Yes, yes, yes. But here's what we want to do. That's not going to happen. And that's kind of a nice little window into sort of the greater, I don't know, kind of like the nuts things that are going on inside this house. We got a little window into it right now where these two out front guys are gone and there's nobody to tell you why.
Let's go to Lewis, who's in Gainesville, and Grant and Danny wants to hop in. Mike Rizzo, Davey Martinez fired by the Nats yesterday. Miguel Cairo named today the interim manager to go with interim GM Mike DiBartolo. What's up, Lewis? How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on here. One thing that, you know, you guys are touching on it right now, so it's perfect, is what do the learners want from this? Do they want to have a winning ball club again, or did, you know, they got their World Series and, you know, and I say the learners, but ownership in general, do they, are they happy with, you know, a World Series championship a couple of years ago? And they're like, well, you know, the money keeps coming in. People keep going to the game. Do we need to invest any more of our own money than we actually have to? And if that's the case, what
there's,
should
there's
we
There's no
expect?
Way,
should
though. It's such a good question, and it's a good call. Did you hear Jeff Passan on the show earlier today by chance?
I did not, no.
Yeah, so I'll play a clip for you here that's relevant to this in a second. Passan of ESPN, who broke the story yesterday, who's the top reporter covering baseball. He's kind of the Schefter of Major League Baseball, who was on with us earlier today. But to that point, you know, when he asks the, well, first let's play the Passan clip, and then I want to get into this. But this was Passan earlier today on Grant and Danny.
Most of all, like, do you want to win? I think that's a reasonable question for somebody to ask him at this point, because what have the Nationals, in terms of their budget and their payroll, shown fans over the last 5 years, other than, I'm not going to say a disinclination to go out and win, but sorry, when you're a team in Washington, D.C., and your highest paid player is retired, and your second highest paid player is a Toronto Blue Jay, what are you trying to do here?
That's a good line.
That's just a funny thing. What are you trying to do here? It's so funny. I don't know, Jeff. Well, I can't answer that.
Well, those are the questions reserved for the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Nutting family and the Marlins and the Royals to a degree,
well,
right?
Well, here's what's so painful about that, Danny. There is nothing worse than being a fan of a team like that,
mm-hmm,
with absentee owners that don't care, who have completely checked out. And we're way closer to that in D.C. as baseball fans right now than anybody's comfortable admitting.
Yeah, I forgot. I can't remember the exact number of the stat, but it's like Paul Skeens has a 1.72 ERA over his last 11 starts, and he hasn't won a single game. Something to that effect, right? It's to that degree where it's the organization, such a joke. They've got the makings of one of the great staffs in baseball, and, you know, so what? Who cares? We're going to lose our 100 games. But that's not the company you should be in, obviously. And they won the World Series with the 13th highest cash payroll. So it doesn't mean you have to be one or two or even five or six. Just as long as you're in a competitive place and you get a couple of breaks, you got a chance to do something pretty special. And they were consistently there for a while. We all know what happened. The course of history altered, and they haven't been close to that ever since. Their actual payrolls are masked by, or they look more inflated because they're paying guys that don't play for them anymore, to Passan's point, whether it's retirees, guys on other teams, deferments, and the like. They are not competitive and have no designs of being that way. So you can fire as many general managers as you want. If you give the next guy these sets of tools to work with, don't expect a masterpiece.
So to the caller's point where he said, basically, do they want to win? Like, what is their end game? He referenced this idea that, well, they're still making a bunch of money because people are still coming to the games. And they're making money because they're owners of a sports team and you print cash. Obviously, you're in the green. But this is not going well. People don't go to the games. They are poorly attended. It is a bad attendance. You know, when you look at 30 teams in Major League Baseball, when you look at the fact they announced 11,000 for one of their games against the Rockies on their last homestand, it doesn't have to be this way. You could spend something and make something. It takes spending money to make money. And think about running a restaurant, going and getting new booths and new chairs and spending money on cooking utensils and whatever else you need to do a better job. They've stopped A, B is also down. Now, your point is, well, that they haven't had to close the restaurant yet. I guess not yet, but I've been in the restaurant a bunch lately. It's not like it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the atmosphere there is bad. And the fan base is disinterested. This week is great because people are going to call and want to talk to us. 2 weeks ago, we couldn't just break down the Nats for hours on end. Nobody cared. A month ago, when they were just winning baseball games at a 500 level, nobody cared at all. Opening day was a knockdown, drag-out fight to try to sell out. And I'm not suggesting that they're going to be the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cardinals or something because the history is not here. So there's going to be 4 hours before a playoff game, seats available before a wild card game. Like, I get where we are and what this is. But at the same time, it has gotten bad. And whereas the caller is saying, I think it's working well enough for them financially to just not do anything, I disagree. They can't be happy at the ballpark numbers and seeing what they're raking in via gates. There's no way it's successful right now. Charlie's in Annapolis. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I don't know about you, but I do not have, like, the Commander situation. I don't have 30 years for the Nationals to win another World Series. And if I'm a prospective GM or even manager coming in, interviewing for these positions, I'm going to want to know, you know, what type of backing am I going to get as far as support for the resources that I need to succeed. And I just think I don't trust Lerner just simply for the fact that he doesn't want to spend money on his team. So why would he want to spend money on resources specifically if the attendance is declining? And my whole thing is like, I just don't see them, or at least I see them getting some sort of bottom feeder to fill this GM and even managerial position. Well, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you basically are saying to a candidate, if you've got choices, you won't pick us unless something dramatically shifts, right? There'll be plenty of guys that don't have other offers, that don't have other choices, that aren't as sought after. You can find someone to manage your baseball team. You can find someone to be a general manager. I mean, this is, like, Houston Texans every year would find somebody that was in no danger of being hired by anybody else. Till it seems like now they found somebody pretty special. But they're just combing through, you know, are you in charge of linebackers? Or do you label the film for somebody? You can be our head coach for a year, make a little bit of money, get fired. You could find someone to do it. But if you've got choices, to the caller's point, this would not be your first choice unless you get substantive change and a guarantee that those things would happen. And do you trust that to be the case? I don't know that I do.
I'm curious if there's any way that they basically now get shamed into having to spend a good bit, whether that's going big on the GM and the manager, or maybe even in free agency where they could scapegoat this last regime and Mike Rizzo and say, we weren't opposed to it. They didn't think we were ready. I mean, they could say whatever they need to say and go sign a really good pitcher and a really good bat this offseason. I don't think it'll happen, but it would be pretty amazing and a way for them to spin the narrative pretty considerably if they wanted to do that. Let's look at what that might look like. If you want to hop in as you're getting in the car and leaving work today, Mike Rizzo is out. Davey Martinez is out. We'll also update our poll on whether or not you think Mike Rizzo should have been fired yesterday. That is a question for you right now on the phones. 800-636-1067. Do you feel like the decision was warranted? This is The Fan. I don't know if there's enough time left in the season for Mike DiBartolo to do anything that would make it look obvious on the outside that they're more analytically run, but they are going from a veteran scout, old school thinker to the top analytics guy that they have in their front office. And that's what a lot of people have been clamoring for. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that materializes in a tangible way for us.
There might be some sort of edict, like the way the Rays do or did, where it's like the front office is calling down to the manager, like, hey, this is how the batting order is going to get optimized, or this is when the pitcher's coming out of the game. I mean, obviously not to that degree.
But
that's, I'm exaggerating.
See, but that's but, my thing about that, everyone acts like the Nats are from 1903. Like, they already don't let their starters pitch into the sixth inning 90% of the time. Trevor Williams is five and dive. Sure. Mike Soroka's quick hooked. Like, guys don't face the lineup three times. Yeah. I don't think there's going to be anything in game, definitely, that we see. Maybe a couple matchup things here and there with relievers. Like, I don't know. But it would be really cool to, at some point, notice something and go, oh, there's more of an analytic bend to this.
Huh.
But I don't think there's enough runway ahead. And certainly if he's not talking a whole lot publicly about philosophy or anything, I don't know if it's anything we're really going to notice. Because really twofold. Number one, it's very hard to recognize it from the outside anyway in terms of the actual games being played. But also, they're not nearly as in the
dark ages as people
pretend they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that their scouting didn't outweigh their analytics for a long time and they weren't slow to come around on all this. I think that's very true. But in terms of actual how they run their baseball team or how they manage or how they put a lineup together or how they manage a pitching staff, there's no difference really between them and the analytics teams. Other than the fact, here's one actually. Would they use an opener? Like, I've always said there's no way, as long as Mike Rizzo runs this team, they'll ever use an opener. If Mitchell Parker, who stinks in the first inning, a couple weeks from now is pitching in the second because they opened with Cole Henry or something, that would be something right away that I would go, this would never have happened with Mike Rizzo.
There you go.
That's a Mike DiBartolo thing. Now, by the way, this is a whole other nerd conversation, but I'm not pro opener because Mitchell Parker still has to throw a first inning.
Whatever hit the first inning he goes out there, it's his first inning.
It's the second inning now,
yeah.
But it's still his first, and I don't know how that helps you. But my point is,
no, it makes sense.
Like, that's something in Rizzo's world where it's about, like, it's just, he's not looking at baseball and going, yeah, we'll throw a lefty for an inning, we'll juke him, and then throw the righty in the second on. Whereas maybe DiBartolo and Cairo get together and he goes, I want to try this. And Cairo goes, okay, let's give it a whirl. Let's go to Campbell in D.C. What's up, Campbell? How are you?
Good evening, guys. You are the people I need to talk to about baseball. You are the best people on the radio for baseball.
Appreciate you, dude.
Thanks, buddy.
So, Danny, you understand baseball, and Grant, I know you know baseball. They had to go. I was at the game Friday. I was at the game yesterday. You got DJ, your returning all-star, on the bench, but you still, because you wanted to go all right-handers, but you still had James Wood in the lineup. Alex Call is not your leadoff. That's a coaching decision. The analytics don't work with that. Josh Bell does not hit. Yeah, he hit this weekend, but he should have been at the bottom lineup by now. So, again, what goes to Rizzo? We're still shopping at CVS for grocery items, and everybody else is at Aldi's and Whole Foods. So those two needed to go. It has been time for Davey. If you go back and look at the record, go back to when Rizzo came there, we get a veteran understanding the game manager, and then we go cheap and get a new guy. We went Manny Acta to Davey Johnson. Then we went to Matt Williams, and then we went to Dusty.
Dusty
to Davey. So it's a constant repeat. They don't want to pay for a manager. That's fine. They want to sell the team. Who wants to buy the team if you come at your stadium and you look to your right of you, oh, there's Lerner property. Look to the left of you, there's Lerner property. And I think I talked to you guys before. I coach a high school team in the city. I go to these games, and I can see bad from a mile away. And
baseball's been dreadful lately.
Appreciate you, dude.
I mean, there's just no doubt. That was one of my biggest gripes with Davey Martinez. Like, one of the hallmarks, as much as battling
and there's
in the
always
late
trade-offs,
innings,
but yeah, this
but
is it.
One of the hallmarks of his teams for years have been crappy base running.
Mm-hmm.
They never fix it. Nobody ever gets benched. Nobody ever gets pulled. Nobody ever gets taken out of a game or yelled at. And I get it. It's the big leagues. You don't need to make a scene every time someone does anything wrong. But my God, man, you've been the worst base running team essentially for 5 years in a row. Do something once, anything.
Yeah.
Bench someone who runs into a stupid out or doesn't advance when they're supposed to one time. And they never, ever, ever do. If Miguel Cairo does it, I'll give the guy a standing ovation. Make one adjustment one time. They're also dreadful defensively. Little things, man. Things like going back to spring training and drill work and PFPs, and it just gets old. Is it on the managers and on the staff? No, it's on the players most of the time, for sure. I'm not going to go full Davey Martinez from a few weekends ago.
It's never on the coaches.
But just once.
Yeah.
The little things that you can control. Control them once.
Yeah.
Go a series. Let's do a game first. Let's do a game without running into an out. Let's do a series without a stupid blunder on the base paths, like we're 19 years old playing in the big leagues and don't have a clue which one's our head and which one's our hand. Just once. I mean, it's been years of this that they've done this.
Yeah, and that's the trade-off. And so the other aspect of Dave Martinez is the guys never quit. They play hard until the end. Even if they're down 9 runs in the ninth, they're going to scratch for 4 or 5 and maybe get the tying run of the on-deck circle. That's one of the hallmarks. So you take the good with the bad. The same way that when you had Dusty Baker as the manager, you're going to have a bunch of guys that love playing for him, and you're going to double switch out and have Wilmer Defoe facing Clayton Kershaw. Or you're going to have Jose Lobatone get picked off of first base. There's going to be things. You're always going to have trade-offs here. So what's the next set of trade-offs they're going to try to opt in for? To me, I would welcome a total pain in the butt, hard ass, like just militarize this thing. The first time, I dare you to get picked off. I dare you to not score from third with the infield back and one out on a high chopper to second base. I dare you to test this new person that I have in mind. This drill sergeant will make you run poles after the game for what I've got in mind. And combine that with an MIT nerd with 7-inch horn-rimmed glasses, and let's go to work for a couple of seasons and see what we get out of it. Just because I'm tired of the other thing. But doesn't mean it's the right thing long-term. But just, and this goes back to the point that I can't get over this. With everything bad happening, nobody changed a thing.
It is insane.
Like, no, not a single, like, move the rosin bag to the other side of the mound.
How many coaches got fired?
Nobody.
How many assistants to the assistant got replaced?
I mean, Grant, nothing at that ballpark is different. And that's from concession line. Like, God forbid on a hot day you want to read us in left field. You're going to miss an inning and a half.
Who's the usher who's always by the red box? Ryan, your buddy. What's our girl's name? Heather.
Heather.
It's not Heather's fault. But, like, Heather's still in the same section.
Move Heather over to 105 and switch her with 10 just to shake it up,
do
man.
Do something,
just
someone.
Someone do something.
Well, yesterday something
I guess
happened.
That was it.
What is one of the top analysts covering Major League Baseball in the country think about what the Nats did yesterday? That is next on The Fan.